Next speaker is Dan Kaminsky, those of you who have worked on peer-to-peer systems are probably aware that the bane of all peer-to-peer systems projects is NAT. There are large sections of the network where you can't connect in, and when you have two different people who are both behind this, they basically can't talk to each other, which in a peer-to-peer system, it really sucks when two peers can't talk to each other. So Dan has done a number of things, although one of the aspects of his project is some really frightening but very interesting hacks to make it possible for these peers to instantiate direct connections to each other. So Dan will take a minute here to set up his machine. And how you doing there, Dan? Dan will take about 3 minutes, during which you can go to the bathroom and stuff. And then he will start presenting.
I'd like to have a last.
What? Oh.
So that demo wasn't, you know, very impressive, but MNET really does work. It has for years. And so if you're interested in those things that I described, then there's a simple process that at least 20 people have already figured out. That's all. Just a second. Oh, wait. Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, that's right.
I can do this. One of them went down at the same time. One of them went down last night, one of them went down this morning.
Oh, they're completely separate.
Absolutely unrelated. Should happen like in different places, controlled by different people.
It's a conspiracy, man.
I'm just working down.
Nothing ever goes wrong one at a time.
Are you serious with this one? Well, I'm going to move this thing over here. Okay.
Had net earlier today.
Oh, this is not going to be a fun thing to do if I don't have net.
I can hack it and local host shit, but that's so ugly.
That's kind of weird, because everyone else is net.
Okay, we will disconnect PCMCIA. It's all fun and games until someone loses an eye. The game? Yeah.
No net.
The network cable is unplugged.
Okay, do we have a...
No, that's not...
This is the special problem with your box.
Hey, Jonathan?
Yeah?
How about we try plugging Ethernet into your box just to see if the cable's working? Because he's having trouble.
I guess I can stick an Ethernet card in my box.
Yeah, to run it to see what he said.
Yes.
All right. Neither of you has this red Zircom Ethernet PCMCIA card, do you?
No. I have two PCMCIA Ethernet cards with me.
Yeah, but driver likelihood's pretty low.
Let's see what happens when we plug it in. I'm thinking it's having actually problems with physical length.
This is not going to be doable. Let's see what happens when this happens. Let's see if Windows actually was smart enough to, like, preload drivers. Can't believe I'm doing this with Windows. It's gonna be evil. Good job. On the table. We have net. So that problem's averted. So I'm just like setting up basic connectivity here. I'm gonna start off with the craziness, and then go into like real world associations. What time is it? Fuck it, let's hit it.
Okay. Bring the laptop up here and speak into that.
clear up this shit.
Okay, everyone. Dan is now ready to start his presentation. So please sit down, stop chattering, and Dan will talk. And here's Dan.
Hey everyone, welcome to CodeCon, or you've been here for a while, so I hope you're enjoying CodeCon, whatever you prefer. Usually when I go ahead and give a talk, I have some nice PowerPoint slides, and I'm like, you know, go ahead and view this slide and see what great things... No. Thank you. I'm here with engineers, and I'm here to talk to engineers, so screw the slides, let's actually chat. Nat is a goddamn ugly hack that has permeated our networks by necessity. Now, how terrible is that? Address space is a pain in the ass. Dealing with firewalling, one nice thing about NATs is it actually firewalls by default. You know, it's one of those features. Nothing has incoming connectivity. That's a feature. Unfortunately, it makes life rather miserable for us in the P2P space. I have two different solutions to the NAT problem. One of them is real world, let's go ahead and actually do this. The other one is fanciful as hell, which basically means it's the worst possible hack you could ever imagine. Now, after hearing all that really nice stuff with Mojo Nation, I was gonna start out and, you know, give the nice technical stuff and say, here's the real world, and, you know, now here's the future. But after hearing all the nice Mojo Nation stuff, I'm just gonna flip the order, so deal with it. Yet another reason slides suck, they don't scale well, you know. If you look really slowly at what happens on a network when two hosts behind NATs try to talk to each other. First of all, why doesn't it work? You've got Alice and Bob. Both of them are behind NATing firewalls. Both of them want to communicate with each other. Well, let's say Alice tried to send it. Does everyone here know the three-way handshake of TCP? SYN is the connection request, SYN ACK is a connection response, then you have a final ACK saying, okay, we're going to start a bidirectional session to each other. That's basically, in a nutshell, your three-way TCP handshake, which does not work over NAT for this reason. Alice wants to communicate with Bob. Alice goes ahead and sends a SYN packet to what she sees as Bob. Unfortunately, that's actually Bob's firewall that's NATing. Bob has some private IP. Bob has no actual direct connection to the internet. Alice tries to send a SYN to Bob. Bob's firewall is like, I'm not listening. Go away. Sends a reset. Bob tries to do the same thing to Alice. Bob sends a SYN to Alice. Actually hits her firewall. Her firewall says, I'm not listening. Go away. Reset gets sent. But if you look really slowly at what's actually happening on the network, you go host by host and you actually see something interesting. Alice goes ahead, sends a SYN to Bob. From Alice, you know, looking at Alice's host. Alice's network card sends out a packet, has the flags, it leaves Alice's host, hit Alice's firewall. Alice's firewall goes ahead, creates an entry in what's called the state table that says, hey, I'm gonna, you know, first of all, I'm rewriting the addresses of this SYN packet such that it'd be readable on the internet. You know, I'm gonna send this connection request out with the real global IP instead of my, like, nice little private local IP address or private IP address. So it rewrites the packet. Second of all, it remembers not only did I send out a, you know, rewritten connection request, I'm expecting a connection response. It sets a state that it's looking for a packet, the SYN ACK. Now, when that packet goes ahead, hops over on the internet a couple times, hits Bob's firewall goes ahead and says, screw off, I'm not serving any MP3s, reset. That reset goes back to Alice's firewall, which was expecting a response, and the response is screw off. So Alice's firewall says, hey, I don't need this state entry anymore. Off it goes. What's good? We're waiting for a response. What's bad? The response is screw off. Can we get the good without the bad? And the answer is yes. But only if we're actually managing to the packet generation ourselves. Because what we can do is we can set the time to live on the packet. We can set the time to live on the SYN packet, so when it is emitted onto the internet, the SYN goes out, exits Alice's firewall, goes on a few hops on the net, and just dies, just disappears. There's a t- TTL time exceeded message sent by some random router out there, but what do we care about that? That's not actually seen by the firewall as a reset. So what you end up happening is that Alice's firewall is waiting for a response and never gets that response rejected. So now Alice's firewall is sitting around waiting for a response. And Bob goes ahead and does the same thing, and now Bob's firewall is waiting for the response. We've got two hosts waiting for responses. Can we go ahead and get those responses to them? Well, not directly. Alice can't send a SYNAC, and Bob can't send a SYNAC, but you know what? I've got this nice little handshake-only TCP connection broker that can. It's sitting on the network, it spoofs packets all the ding-dong day, and it sends the SYNAC that both are waiting for. Thank you very much. This is not actually that trivial. I'm oversimplifying it for a bit. One of the problems is that in order for our connection broker to go ahead and spoof the responses that neither Alice and Bob's firewall is intelligent to provide, the connection broker needs to know a little bit about the traffic that it's actually moving. So it needs to know, first of all, what source port to what ports it's connecting through. Alice goes ahead and knows what source port it set on its request, on her request, but she doesn't exactly know what port the firewall chose to use. Now, the firewall is basically multiplexing connection after connection onto a single IP address, and one of the ways it does this is by switching the local port number that it sends out. Now, if it's switching it, that means Alice doesn't necessarily know what it is, and therefore can't necessarily tell the connection broker where it's trying to go. The solution to that is actually not usually too bad, because your firewall is actually going ahead and, in general, just incrementing each of its local port numbers by one for each attempt. So Alice goes ahead and actually tries to make a connection to the connection broker. The connection broker goes, oh, hey, I see this is where that little counter on the firewall is. So most likely when Alice sends her, the doomed little TTL thing out to Bob, that's going to be the port number that the firewall is going to pick. And that works to a degree. Now, it is possible that the firewall goes ahead and has a randomizer function, and it just basically says, I'm going to make sure there's no collisions, but I'm just going to pick a random one, and that's that. Can we deal with that situation? Well, we can if only one side has this randomizer in there, and that's because you actually have a really small space. Local port numbers are only 16 bits of range, right? So how many people here are familiar with the birthday paradox, which basically says, yes, thank you, good crypto people in the audience. If you're trying to get a collision between two random sets of data and you actually can have both sides randomized and it doesn't matter, like, for example, there are probably a number of people in this room with the same birthday, you basically have Alice make 256 requests to Bob, and you have the broker make 256 attempts to respond back to Alice. Odds are you're going to hit a collision. Problem is, how do you know which collision worked? You throw your port number into the IPID field, and the firewall sends that back to Alice, and then Alice knows. That also works. Implementation-wise, this is being a pain in the ass to write. But network and technique-wise, it actually does work. Unfortunately, real-world solutions are a heck of a lot more useful. And in the real world today, we don't have this really nice TCP-only connection broker. What we do have is something that I work on, one of my projects. I'm one of the developers for OpenSSH. And I respect every single one of you out there that is working on your own solutions for really crazy, really intelligent networking. And I don't mean to denigrate any of you by saying, hey, SSH has some cool stuff too. But what I am saying is SSH is deployed on a heck of a lot of platforms today, and there's a heck of a lot of servers out there that we can start bouncing off of in interesting ways. And if we can use SSH to go ahead and do this kind of bouncing, we might actually be able to have some more interesting effects than otherwise expected. Now we'll switch to the real world. Wake up, computer. Hello. Computer went to sleep. Go ahead and kick it a little. So OpenSSH. SSH, what does SSH do? SSH does three things. First major thing it does is, well, duh, it gives you a shell on a remote machine. It doesn't just give you a shell on the remote machine, though. When it gets you its connection, it gives you an authenticated connection, and it gives you an encrypted connection, and it does it in a manner that's actually reasonably trusted across the internet. Unlike SSL, by the way, SSH is actually perfectly forward secure. That means if I go ahead and break into your box a year from now, I can't decrypt today's traffic. SSL isn't this way. It's very strange. I can just sniff your traffic for a year, go in, break into your machine, steal your private key, decrypt all that nice traffic that you've been sending over the last year. This is pretty much one of the more embarrassing things in all of internet cryptography. Thank you very much. Oh, and yes, 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 there are perfectly forward secure modes to SSL that nobody uses. And it doesn't even matter because that damn little yellow lock comes up even without them, so who cares? Even if the modes exist, the user never knows it's real. So, SSH achieves forward security by having you authenticate you authenticate a long-term key that basically says, hey, you know, this is actually the host that I'm trying to connect to. And every 6 hours, SSH generates a new short-term key. You know that you're actually getting a legitimate short-term key because you're getting it from a connection authenticated through this nice long-term key. It's a separation of authentication and encryption. And that actually is a very effective means. Now, one thing about SSH, incidentally, if you're seeing on this machine, yes, this is a Windows box. Windows has this nice thing now called Cygwin, which oddly enough is run by Red Hat. Cygwin is basically Unix on Windows and is really, really nice for Unix people like me who still have to go ahead and support Windows boxes. Hang on, where is this nice zoom button? And as you can see, UNAME actually, horror of horrors, is reporting NT. Hopefully I won't be too tar and feathered over that. Okay. Useful stuff. Step one, let's actually so that you can move more than just a shell over SSH. SSH for a long time has had the ability to go ahead and run remote commands as if they were local. Big deal, that's just a shell. SSH has also had the ability to go ahead and forward remote ports. In other words, you have some TCP port visible on some remote host, and you know you do your nice little port forwards, and you get a lot of expertise, and it looks really cool, but it's a pain in the ass to use. And nowhere near enough people use it, and basically because it's not very usable. So I went ahead and added some new functions to SSH called dynamic forwarding. Now, dynamic forwarding basically means that an application can go ahead and tell SSH where it would like its connection to go. Now, this is done over a very nice, widely deployed API called SOX. Napster has SOX, Yahoo Instant Messenger has SOX, Internet Explorer supports SOX. So the SSH client actually receives the SOX request from your application and says, oh, okay, so this is where it wanted to go. Tells the SSH server, for this specific port forward, I would like to be going to that host over there. And suddenly SSH moves more than just really strange apps. Suddenly SSH is moving Yahoo, or SSH is moving web browsing. And I'll do a demonstration for you of that right now. First thing to do is to, and I'll switch to this one. Can you guys hear me? Yes, you can. First thing to do is to go into some random host. I'm just going to go into my personal server at Docs. What the heck? A network cable is on. Is it plugged back in? Maybe. This might work, or we might not have net. So, SSH at Duxbearer.com. All I do is say, open a dynamic forwarding listener on port one, on port 1080. So, you know, it says we're going ahead. We're logged in here from the DNA lounge.
Gonna turn off Zoom.
First thing we do is we go into Internet Explorer, and we say, well, we'll do Yahoo. Well, no, we'll do Internet Explorer. Why not? And this will actually, we are actually going to go back to the NAT to NAT aspects of this, so give me some time here. We're going to tell IE, go ahead and route your traffic through, you can't really see it up there, but we're going to say, Every time you try to make a connection, route it through 127.0.0.1 port 1080 and use the SOX protocol to inform whatever TCP listener you encounter of where you actually meant to be going. So we hit OK. We hit OK. We hit OK again. And I'm assuming this is going to work. It may very well not. And something screwed up. Yeah, I went ahead and tried to actually get some reliability out of Internet Explorer. I think I deserved the results. And Net appears to be no longer working on this machine. Life sucks. Okay. I'm unfortunately going to have to do this without a live demo, so I'll try to talk you through what's going on here. In a perfect world, Internet Explorer would have opened up, and all of Internet Explorer's network traffic would have been routed through some random SSH daemon. Now, what's actually significant is any SSH daemon would have been happy. SSH's port forwarding functionality basically says, remote host, please give me a connection to that site. So you have, in every single deployed SSH daemon, a port forwarding infrastructure ready for you to go ahead and build off of. So if you go ahead and actually deploy SSH as a component of your applications, it's BSD licensed, so you can go ahead and do that, even if it is commercial. First of all, you get a very nice port forwarding infrastructure for you to use. Second of all, you get a very nice crypto and authentication system for you to use that's already trusted. So you don't need to go ahead and home grow your own. You can build off of SSHs. One of the demos I was going to do, which unfortunately I can't, is this system is actually really general purpose. You can go over to dialpad.com and issue a phone number, and it will make a phone call. And the only network traffic that you're doing is TCP outgoing on port 22. So this will actually penetrate 98% of firewalls. What about the other 2%? What about if you have to use a SOC server to get out of your own network? What if you have to go ahead and use UDP? Or what if you have to go ahead and use anything? SSH is written by, or OpenSSH is managed now by Theo Durrat. Theo Durrat's about the most paranoid mother in about the face of the planet. He's fun to work with. No. But Theo pretty much has no interest in supporting every possible single outgoing connection method that any person might want. So Theo doesn't want to go ahead and support SOX 4 outgoing, SOX 5 outgoing, HTTP proxies, support going over UDP, supporting going over 80,000 different ways. So instead he created what's called a proxy command. What you can do with SSH is you can say, okay, I'm on some network here that's so amazingly broken that I can't just issue a direct TCP call. So I've got some other application here called a proxy command. It's going to go ahead, do all my negotiation for me, and at the end, I'm going to be sitting there with an 8-bit clean link to some SSH daemon somewhere. And it works. Basically, you just say, my proxy command for this session is going to be connect through, there's an actual app called Connect. You can say, hey, I'm going through this SOX 5 daemon, and I want you to do SOX 5 negotiation, and I will end up giving you the SSH banner at the end. That gets passed into SSH. SSH uses it. Everyone's happy. So you guys can have all your really crazy network hacks that route over 83 different hosts, and SSH will interface with it beautifully. So we can go ahead and we can move everything over SSH, or we can move a lot of things over SSH. And we can go ahead and have SSH itself travel over many, many different mediums. But what is the core idea of this talk? What was the core idea here? We're trying to figure out how we go ahead and connect two hosts that are both behind NATs. Now, lots and lots of people have dealt with, well, you know, we'll have a broker, you know, Alice will connect to the broker and Bob will connect to the broker, and you know, I guess we'll have to pass our data back and forth over this broker. This is the instant messenger model, and yes, there's work to go ahead and do SSH over Yahoo Instant Messenger. Back to some kind of topic here. Now, how can SSH go ahead and do this brokering better? Now, as I mentioned earlier, I'd rather not have to do this brokering at all. I would rather the internet itself handle getting my packets from point A to point B. But unfortunately, the internet itself isn't able to do that. Why is it? How can we do SSH better? Well, with port forwards, we could do two things. First of all, we can go ahead and, as discussed, tell our remote tell some daemon somewhere, go ahead and initiate a connection to, you know, give me a pathway to this host that you can see. But there's another, that's called a local port forward. But there's another type called a remote port forward, which is go ahead, listen, and if you get anything, send it back to me, and I'm going to deal with it. And then the SSH client goes ahead and deals with, well, now that I'm dealing with something, I'm going to send it to something I can see. What you have is the ability to not only import connectivity from some remote daemon, you also have the ability to export your own connectivity to some other daemon. And this leads to some very, very interesting results. From my client, you know, so I have some host, and this was actually what this was developed for. I have some host sitting in the middle of some corporate network. And it's a host that, you know, I'm using to do work on their network. And I need to get back into it to administer it or whatnot. How do I do so? Well, the first thing I do is I go ahead and I have that host either automatically, either by calling up the people at that site and say, hey, can you go ahead and click this button on the web page? Or, you know, any number of ways you figure out how to trigger it, my host and their firewall goes ahead and initiates an SSH connection out to some machine on the internet that both me as the engineer and them as, you know, the host in the middle of some screwed up network can see. And this might have to be routed through one of those HTTP tunnelers, or might have to be routed over UDP, or might have to be routed. However, it works because we can use that proxy command that we talked about earlier. So some host out there comes to a machine I can see. It exports not the web service, not port 80, because that's putting something in their network onto the middle of the internet, and that's completely violating security policy. No, much better is if it instead just exports its port 22. It just exports its own SSH daemon. Now, what's really nice about that is if it's just exporting its own SSH daemon, now, if I, you know, me being the engineer, can go ahead and initiate a connection to that SSH daemon, the only thing my host in the middle, the only thing my broker is doing is it's giving me a network path. The actual encryption itself remains end-to-end. I do an authentication, so let's actually walk through this. I really would like to show you on the machine, but it's a Windows box, so it sucks. Blame me, I brought it. No. So you have your host. It goes ahead. So you have your host in the corporate network. It makes an SSH connection to some Bastion machine. And it makes a remote port forward and says, hey, Bastion, your port 2022, if you get any connections to that, I want you to send it back to me. And I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to go and throw it into my own SSH daemon. So Bastion port 2022 equals, we're going to call it Bob's SSH daemon on 22. Alice goes ahead, Alice being engineer, Alice goes ahead and also goes to the Bastion. Alice can be behind a NAT and Bob can be behind a NAT because both Alice and Bob are making outgoing connections to this Bastion host. Alice goes to the Bastion, creates an SSH connection, and says, give me, you know, Alice says, I want a connection to this port 2022. And I'm going to go ahead and route that into my own, could be port 3022. And there's a more efficient way to do this, but I'm trying to keep things a little simple. So Alice's 3022 gets routed onto Bastion's 2022. Bastion's 2022 was routed to Bob's port 22. If Alice makes a connection using SSH to 3022 on her home box, it's going to hop to Bastion, which is then going to hop to Bob. And Alice now will independently authenticate to Bob. Alice and Bob can both be behind NATs, and some Bastion host can be some machine in the middle of any network that you choose. That machine in the middle can only choose whether it is or is not going to route packets. It doesn't get to see the data. It doesn't get to do anything with the data. It just moves data. So Alice gets to talk to Bob. Bastion can't man in the middle because the idea is that Alice is recognizing Bob's cryptographic keys, and therefore Bastion does not have the cryptographic keys. All it has is a path. All it is providing is the pathway for the connection to occur. Alice and Bob have an independent route past that. Like, they independently authenticate. And then, as we discussed earlier, Alice goes ahead, creates a dynamic forwarder on Bob, and moves whatever data she damn well pleases. So, that's pretty much what I have been working on with SSH. It works, and I'm open for questions. Go ahead.
So when you're doing the double connect back with the SSH, you end up tunneling SSH through SSH?
Yes, you do.
So it would be convenient if there was like a clear mode for SSH for the initial tunnels, so you wouldn't have to have the CPU overhead of the two encrypted tunnels. Is that ever going to be added as an option?
I think Theo would rather cut off his left arm than add a no encryption mode to SSH. It used to be in there. There used to be integrated SOC support, but I don't think it'll ever happen. On the basis of, one, it isn't perceived that the CPU load is high enough, and two, especially with the SSH1 protocol, there are security issues that happen if you don't have encryption enabled. But however, in SSH2, if you can go ahead and manually add the null cipher and then just use a packet authenticator, use an HMAC, and you'll actually maintain security. But with SSH1, if you have no crypto, it really fails, even on the Bastion. Go ahead.
I have a question regarding non-stateful protocols and connecting to them. A lot of the mobile devices that are coming out now are using non-stateful protocols, using networks like RAM and Mobitex and things like that really don't do anything more than a store and forward. One project that I'm working on right now, it would be really, really useful if you could do an SSH connection over that kind of a network. Do you see any...
You're making me laugh at an SSH hack. That's impressive. SSH over SMS is basically what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. We're talking about something that's like, but the baud rate really isn't all that low. We're talking like it's fairly high. It's just the message sizes are quite small. So you're talking like maybe a 19.2 network connect speed, but or bandwidth, but like 300. 150, 300 some odd bytes as your message size.
Well, the blocking work's been done in HTTP tunnel, and actually it was HTTP tunnel that we're looking at using to turn into a Yahoo Instant Messenger tunneling system. So as long as we're doing instant messaging, we could probably do it over your system, over your network as well.
Okay.
And incidentally, it appears that SSH is moderate can handle a decent amount of actual noise over its communication path. For various reasons, it's had to re-implement pieces of TCP because it multiplexes many sessions into one TCP session. And among other things, this makes SSH work decently over UDP, which you can do by using netcat and UDP mode as a proxy command, which is very, very, very painful. Other questions?
I'm kind of curious as to the thing you just said made me curious as to whether SSH then implemented retransmission or whether that's something that Netcat does to UDP.
I don't think SSH re-implements retransmission. I think it can handle packets being corrupted slightly. The actual modes I've been thinking about for doing reliable UDP. God, that would make most people shiver. I'm actually thinking about going ahead and encapsulating a TCP session into UDP. So you go ahead and you have a kernel thinking it's talking to a TCP daemon. The TCP daemon is actually copying its packets, completely, sending them as UDP, hits the other side, is, unwrapped and back into TCP, and then if there are things that need to be retransmitted, there are things that need to be dealt with, the two kernels can do their normal negotiation. This, in my mind, is ugly, but it's a lot less ugly than trying to redo all the really nice kernel work that's been done for TCP. Right. So it's just UDP over the network. As soon as it hits either end, it becomes transformed back to TCP.
The original thing that I wanted to say was there are like three No, two problems that I can think of now. One problem is if you tunnel protocols that don't naturally have retransmission over TCP, or even tunneling TCP over TCP isn't too bad, but tunneling UDP over TCP, you're essentially forcing the network to waste bandwidth on something that doesn't necessarily need to get to the other side.
We've long since abandoned like treating the network like any kind of ideal thing. As soon as NAT came in and destroyed global addressability, pretty much it's every host for itself in my mind. Let's move on. Well, talk to me about this after, actually.
Both.
Why wouldn't I have my Bastion machine do the SYNAC stuff?
Yeah.
Well, the idea I actually, this started, my work started by doing full brokering. And then my question was, well, how can I go ahead, you know, it's really inefficient for me to have to copy all this traffic back and forth. Can I have my Bastion host just do connection brokering? And yes, obviously you can. And one of the nice things is it's so little bandwidth to go ahead and do connection brokering that I might as well just have one server do it for anybody on the internet who wants it. Send me a few SYN packets, I send out a SYNAC, you know, to your request. And it's spoofed. Basically, the connection broker sends a SYNAC to Alice as if it came from Bob, and it sends a SYNAC to Bob as if it came from Alice. And it tries to go ahead and match port numbers and sequence numbers and whatever else needs to be matched.
So could you extend that to generalized tunneling so that I could even fool other applications that don't know that they need to do this NAT through a proxy that basically tunnels for them? So that, I'd love to have video telephony work. If I could just get a connection broker to get them going and then tell the other video telephony application, okay, now you've got a socket through my tunnel and you can do what you need to do, or a UDP path.
Possibly. Let me talk to me about this after, and we'll talk about the actual like protocol that you're trying to get moving.
Yes.
Go ahead. What's
second issue is, and I never thought I'd say this, but Microsoft, bless their hearts.
incidentally, I was complaining about Microsoft a little bit excessively earlier. Like, no, they take too much crap for their technical stuff. You know, they do so much in the business side that their technical stuff actually gets some crap too, and it's not entirely deserved.
Anyway, as I said, bless their hearts, they're using their market power now to push most of the NAT vendors to support special protocols to allow clients to open up channels to them. So have you done any work with that to make it work easily if you can, if the NAT's going to support that?
I'm not sure what Microsoft is doing for the actual NAT firewalls. I have determined what firewalls should be doing. Effectively, firewalls need to recognize the deadlock condition of two sides going ahead and trying to create an outgoing link. And that's not too bad, actually. You go ahead and it's like, well, gee, I've got this entry in a state table to Bob. Alice's firewall says, well, gee, there's this entry in my state table to Bob, and now I'm getting an incoming request from Bob that seems to match most of the properties of the entry in my state table. Gee, maybe I should send a SYNAC, you know? I'm working on a spec for that. Whether it'll happen or not, I don't know. But it would basically involve Alice and Bob setting their source ports in a similar range and the firewalls recognizing that that both of them had state tables and that matched and resolving the inconsistency and sending the SYNACs. Yes, there is a right way to do it. And the hope is by building the obscenely wrong way, the right way might actually, you know, spread.
One question again to follow up on your initial proposal to spoof the to IP spoof that SYNAC coming back. A number of issues that are quite unclear to me here. For once, what happens is after Alice sends the initial SYN, Trent, who is sitting behind the same NAT, sends another SYN request to some completely different host. Trent, of course, not at all being involved in the communications of Alice and Bob, who gets the next highest port number assigned with the second packet from Alice after sending a packet to the connection broker to the actual Bob destination, being now N plus two ports higher rather than N. You now spoof the SYNAC going back to N plus one, for all intents and purposes, completely killing the connection that Trent was just trying to set up. In some sense, it's probably just a specialized case of the more general question of what to do if the ports are assigned randomly, but I'd like you to expand on that.
It sounds a little of like what you're describing is that, so let's say Alice has Amy also on her network, and Alice and Amy are both trying to use the connection broker at the same time, and by doing so, they start to step on each other's toes.
Amy doesn't know about the connection broker.
Huh?
Amy doesn't even need to know about the connection broker. Say Amy is another user behind the same net as Alice, who happens to be using net at the same time.
Oh, well, I mean, one of the things I talked about earlier is, yeah, you actually can get some... So is Amy also trying to connect to Bob?
Amy is trying to connect to a completely different host. Amy is utterly unaware of Alice's or Bob's existence.
They just
happen to be sitting behind the same net.
Oh, you know, I've completely thrown out the concept of reliable, you know, dependable every time it works. I'm just trying to get something to work, you know, hopefully. So one of the things that can happen is, so Alice goes ahead and initiates a couple connections over to the connection broker. And the connection broker says, oh my God, you know, these ports are no longer sequential, but they're almost sequential. You know, we get a N plus 1, N plus 5, N plus 3. So there's kind of a range of activity going on here. I'm going to send back 10 Synax. Hope one of them gets through, and Alice will know which one got through because I'll set the IP ID field to that value, and I'll hope that the firewall doesn't mangle the IP ID.
It's not quite clear. I don't believe you actually answered the questions. I'm not concerned about the reliability between Alice and Bob. It's Amy, the innocent bystander.
Why is Amy relevant? Because Amy's trying to connect.
Amy is trying to connect to some other site. As Amy tries to set up a connection to some other site.
Okay.
Amy connects to the NAT. The NAT sets up sends a SYN to the site. Sets up an entry in the state table.
If Amy's connecting to another site,
and now
a
SYNAC comes back to the wrong person.
It's not just a SYNAC. It's a SYNAC from Bob. Like the host that's sending your SYNAC is an integral part of the SYNAC. If Amy's not trying to connect to Bob, there is no way that any packet that's from Bob can go ahead and interfere with Amy, appears to be from Bob. Now, if Amy is actually trying to connect to Bob, you might actually get some weirdnesses that need to be dealt with. But at that point, why would Amy goes ahead and gets a reset because she isn't setting her TTL value. So,
thanks for the answer. Lastly, I just want to briefly comment on the question that was raised earlier by the gentleman who was trying to tunnel TCP over SMTP. Just for your information, there is a SMS authentication and encryption protocol that's specifically optimized to pass messages over SMS. It's called SIMS, and if you'd like to get some specs on it, email me, shamrock@cypherpunks.to.
Yeah, meet me after. Next question. Go ahead. It's on its way. I think this is getting recorded, so we probably should actually do stuff in the mic.
So I'm wondering about the efforts of firewall administrators to prevent people from doing things like this, in the sense that, unfortunately, a lot of firewall administrators actually set their firewall policies, and I'm not endorsing this, but because they want to control and restrict users, you know.
Well, I sat down and I thought about this. You know, what is the actual philosophical thing that's going on here? And, you know, firewalls are set up so that users can create outgoing connections, period. Like, as a firewall administrator, it's not really my network to be concerned about, like, or in other words, it's kind of outside my domain. I want users to be able to make outgoing connections only to that restricted set of hosts on the outside world that might be able to receive connections. Like, the real thing is, I don't want the random world coming in. If one of my hosts wants to get out, that's a completely different security domain.
Okay,
in terms of actually blocking my system, you can block low TTL packets, which actually breaks traceroute. There's a number of things that can be done.
But I mean, a lot of firewall administrators really have reasons of their own, which may or may not be good, to try to do everything they can to prevent people from using connection brokers and to prevent people from making bidirectional connections and to prevent people from using all these tricks. And I'm concerned that they may be able to defeat any particular trick by blocking low TTL connections or by blocking by rewriting arbitrary fields.
Okay, there is an alternate method that actually works well that I didn't describe, which is if you have any kind, if you have any kind of UDP support going on here. So you're actually creating state entries in UDP. There's a lot of actually, you know, in the literature, there's a decent number of methods that use UDP to get do NAT to NAT stuff. One I haven't seen is if Alice and Bob send UDP packets that are matched port numbers out at the exact same time, both of their firewalls will have waiting for response connection states, and if the timing is just right, the packets will be in the middle, both packets will be in the middle of the network waiting for the response. So, you know, Alice says, I'm sending a packet to Bob. Bob says, I'm sending a packet to Alice. Alice's firewall says, you know, what's it say? Oh, waiting for response from Bob. Bob's firewall says waiting for response from Alice. Okay, both of those initial packets are in the middle of the net while both firewalls are waiting for a response. Both firewalls interpret the received packet as a response. So that also works. There's a number of different hacks. That one actually is nice in the sense of, in terms of the wire, it's exactly 100% equivalent to a legitimate connection.
We got time for one more question.
Go ahead, right there.
Where's the code?
Ah, the code. It's being worked on. What I've got working now is a small little project called DocsRoute. Incidentally, a lot of this is defined and discussed in Hackproofing Your Network Second Edition. Singer's Press is getting it out in the next few weeks. You know, I hate to plug it, but all this is actually described in there, including all the SSH stuff. So yes, I've actually done the work to document it. And there is actually code in the book, and I'm releasing it publicly and whatnot. The code in the book goes ahead and is doing the initial libnet, libpcap stuff to suck packets off the wire, do arbitrary work with them, and then put it back on. And you actually need to go ahead and do a lot of raw wire work because there are no socket options for, as far as I know, for setting TTL, especially cross-platform. So, you know, I'm basically talking about do whatever you can to the packet. Just give me a connection that works and... In order to do that, I've done a lot of stuff with libnet and libpcap that is out there. In terms of this actually, you know, working and you actually having this broker tentatively titled Anyron, you know, Enron was a power broker. This is an any-to-any connection broker, which is completely wrong and shreds all the rules, so I guess it's completely accurate too. but yeah, I'm working on it. The SSH stuff works today, and that's really what you can use today to do really nicely done full brokering. And, okay, I think that's it for questions. I thank everyone here and look forward to the next talk.